Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I welcome you. Today, this is called our Talkback program. One day a week, there are no guests. Instead, I look at issues that impact us. For example, today, what happens to our body when we're under stress? What kind of protein should we be having in the morning from health and nutrition? Then I look at our public health issues. This would impact virtually everyone. My public health issue today is industrialization of food. What are the true costs of this from other worlds? And that's because when we buy something today that's inexpensive, let's say like a dollar hamburger, how much does it actually cost? It's not just the dollar that we pay. But when you go to buy an organic apple, you don't get the same advantage. I'll deal with that. Then we have an enormous crisis in the United States. I have been filming it now for 5 years, and or 4 years, and I've completed my principal photography. I'll be going into post-production and bringing it out. It's on poverty. It also now impacts the greatest retirement crisis in American history. The number of individuals who are going to be leaving the workforce, or those who would normally leave the workforce but can't, those who've left and retired now must come back to work, it's a mess. There's virtually no discussion of this. I'll talk about this with information from Ed Seidel from Forbes.com. Then I'm going to look at how the politics of disimagination and the pathologies of power from Professor Henry Giroux from Truthout. We have a lot to share. But here's what's important and what's different about this show, this one-hour show I do. The entire show is open for your calls. Your calls, your comments, your thoughts, your questions. What you feel is important that you'd like to share with us. The number to call from anywhere in North America, that includes Canada, would be 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Let's begin. Some new research from McGill University in Montreal shows that music stimulates the immunity and cuts stress. Quote, before surgery, listening to music is more effective at reducing anxiety than prescription drugs. In a large-scale review of 400 research papers, each one's a different study, that's 400 different studies, they looked at the neurochemistry of music. They showed that playing and listening to music was clearly beneficial for the person mentally and physically. In particular, music was found both to improve the body's immune system function and reduce levels of stress. Now, why is that important? Well, because anyone going in for any form of surgery, let's say you go to a dentist's office, and you're going to have something cut or drilled in your mouth, that creates stress. That creates an elevation in the hormone cortisol. That increases your blood sugar level. That increases your pulse rate. That can take a person that has normal high blood pressure and throw them into the high blood pressure. That could take a person that has high blood pressure and throw them into a stroke. So stress is a killer. Now, I go every year. Actually, I go twice a year to get my teeth and gums checked by a holistic dentist here in Manhattan. And there's always soft classical music playing. And sometimes just meditative music, flute, for example, or harp. I was recently in Denver just 3 weeks ago, and I went into a hotel to get a haircut, and this is a big old Cattleman Hotel, one of the oldest hotels in the West. And downstairs in the lobby, they had a woman playing a harp. Well, I'd never seen that before. All the hotels I go into, I'd never seen someone playing harp, and it was so relaxing. And I went over to her and I said, "Does anybody ever respond to you?" And she said, "Well, I'm doing it right outside the beauty parlor here and the spa, and people really enjoy it." And I was thinking, how rare is it that we hear soft music, flute, guitar, piano, harp, violin? We don't. So one more reason why you should be listening to it, because it can de-stress you at work. Even if you just took a few moments, a couple times a day, if you get stressed, listen to soft music. But it will help you, and therefore I'm suggesting they put music in all operating theaters, in all doctor's offices. It'd make a difference. When giving people dietary advice, I have to work with the budget they have. If they have a problem, you know, with money, as many people do, then you have to look for the best food at the least expensive price. And a lot of people don't pay attention to breakfast. And they eat a lot of the corn breakfasts and wheat breakfasts, these cereals. And those are very expensive when you look at what you're really getting. You're getting a refined carbohydrate that is filled with what are called acrylamides. That's because in the baking of almost anything, when you have a brown crust on a piece of bread, for example, or on a bagel or a donut, those are cancer-causing agents. That's what actually causes our cells to age prematurely. It was interesting. I was getting my juice today, and every day throughout the day, I drink different juices. And these are highly concentrated, not ones I would ask people to try on their own, because your body has to get used to them. But I'll give you one juice that I have in the morning. I start with green apples, to which I add 2 to 3 lemons, the whole lemon, and grapefruits. And that makes a large juice. And then I spike that. And I put extra vitamin C in it. And also, that's generally good for about 2 hours. And then, of course, throughout the day, I take other juices. So this woman comes up to me. And she looks, she says, "Gary." And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Oh, I haven't been listening to you for a long time on radio." And she said, "I haven't seen you up close." She says, "Your skin's very, very young skin." I said, "Well, yeah." And she said, "Boy, I wish that the people that were listening to a long time ago, including members of my own family, had stuck with the healthy eating, but they didn't, and they've all suffered health consequences." And I shared this with her. I thought of this about 6 months ago, and I mentioned it then, but it's worth reminding ourselves. Like many of you, I grew up in a small community where family was very important, which is one of the reasons that through my immediate family, plus the extended family, my uncles and aunts, character development was crucial. If you didn't have a good character, you were not going to end up well, according to them. And as I observed them over the decades, I never saw a single person I knew getting healthier the older they got, or looking better the older they got. To the contrary, it was completely normal for virtually all the women to put on weight by the age of 35 or 40. That was considered middle age. And by the age of 50, most were diabetic or had high blood pressure, were on multiple meds. And no one thought that was unusual. Quite simply because we, in the small community I grew up in West Virginia, we didn't have a model for anyone to say, "Would you whiz? There's someone who's our age, and look at them. They don't have the gray hair. They don't have the wrinkles. They don't have the fat. Their heart is good." We didn't have that. just because everybody conformed to the same social standard. Everybody smoked. When I think of how much secondhand smoke I was exposed to, it was just an enormous amount. Everybody drank. They didn't drink to get drunk. Social drinking was a norm. Everybody ate lots of meat and big pieces of meat because that showed that you were a very conscientious mother who would go to the store, and almost everyone went to a local butcher store. Someone whose family had had that butcher store forever, and they would go in and get their regular cut of 2-inch thick steak. And I don't know why 2 inches. I don't know who came up with it. But it was assumed that you provide your family with a 2-inch steak each. And by the way, it wouldn't matter if you're skinny and wiry like I was. I was very thin. Or you know, large like my father. You all ate the same amount of food. But then you were considered to have done well. In other words, you took care of your family. Remember the adage, you know, we put a roof over their head, clothes on their back, you know, and food in them. All of which ended up creating disease, and all of the things that we did caused us to age prematurely. But I, to this day, could not get anyone that I grew up with, not a single soul, to change anything. You have no idea how frustrating that is for me. So many of my best friends have passed, including my two best friends growing up. I remember running around the track at my home. I have a quarter-mile running track I built in what had been the woods that I cleared and put this running track and this quarter-mile track, and that's where I do my heavy-duty training for my national and world games championships. And here's one of my buddies who was an outstanding athlete until college, finished, and then no longer an athlete. And I see, realize, Tom, at age 50, you have a chance to be as healthy a 50 as anyone's ever been, but you got to make some changes. And he said, what? And I went through the changes. You got to give up smoking, and you've got to give up the coffee in the morning and the bacon and eggs and the sausage. You got to give up. No, I can't give those up. Sure you can. No, I can't. Gary, I'm not like you. Now, what you do is good for you, but, you know, I'm not going to give it up. And he didn't. And, of course, inevitably, lung cancer came and brain cancer, and he died. And here's the takeaway message. There's two basic rules of living that I have found that have helped me for the vast majority of people. We'll only know the truth of our choices when we reach our destinations. And that includes people in social movements. That includes people in the anti-war movements and the environmental movements. It includes people who go through divorce or bankruptcy. I just watched a program today while working at my desk writing commentaries for this coming week's programs. And it was all about athletes. National football, national basketball players, and national baseball. How many hundreds went bankrupt recently? These are all recent. And the timeline was startling. The average length of time before a person is broke from the national basketball was 5 years. Football was 3.2 years. Well, that's not long, and it didn't matter how much the contracts they had signed. Some of these guys went broke having earned over $100 million. How's that possible? How do you blow through that amount of money? Well, Mike Tyson blew through over $400 million. And then each of these guys in this document, he talked about, oh, gee whiz, you know, their colleges should also prepare you to how to be financially responsible, because you get out and suddenly you're given a bonus check and you've never seen this kind of money, and then you go splurging and you go to nightclubs and you have to wear all this bling and you have to get the new Maseratis and Ferraris and Lamborghinis and the big apartments and the homes, and then you go to the clubs and there are all the women and they're all wanting to get pregnant, and And the next thing you know, your playing days are over, but your bills are still there. You know, that was part of it. Well, there's an example. Gee whiz, I didn't know what to do till after I had done it. That's like saying, I didn't know I shouldn't eat the French fries and the hamburgers and the hot dogs and the pizzas and drink all the beer and the whiskey until I did it. Now I got cirrhosis of the liver. Now I got high blood pressure. Now I have acne. Now I have fatigue. I didn't know we should have voted for this president or the last president. You know, I just did it. I thought it was the right thing. Did you think? Did you look? Did you want to know the truth? And therein is what I found. Most people don't want to know the truth about anything that would cause them to feel they made wrong choices. Here is the positive takeaway message. And this is what I'm hopeful, and actually know that many of you, like this woman today, because she was very healthy looking, trim and healthy, nice skin. And she said, my sister and I are only a year apart. We look 20 years different. She says, that's the difference. Here's the message. What do you want your goals to be? Do you want health and happiness? Do you want joy and creativity? Do you want independence of thought? Then make your selections that allow that to happen. So if I want to be healthy, I have to make healthy choices. So in the morning, I'll have that juice that I mentioned instead of a cola. I'll have a protein shake instead of bacon and eggs or some kind of cereal, sugar-coated cereal, or a bagel or a donut. They both give you an outcome. And anyone who tries to double down on this illogical idea that it doesn't matter what you do, they're living in complete denial. Every single thing you do in your life has a consequence, without exception. Everything has a consequence. So ask yourself, what do you want? If you want to be happy, all right, then think happy thoughts. Surround yourself with happy people. Do things that allow you to be happy, like having a pet. That's wonderful. Some companion that you can give your love to, get love. Be around people in a relationship that is loving. There's no purpose in being in any relationship that isn't without unconditional love and joy and happiness. Then trying to make it work when it doesn't, that's just masochistic. I don't believe, at least in my life, I've never encountered a situation where a bad relationship suddenly became a good relationship. No, it's a sharing of energy, so we just can't stand the idea of giving up. So we just spend enormous amounts of our energy and time trying to redeem what we once had or thought we had. And that's the mistake we make. So think about that. And I think right now, when we're looking at our lives, most Americans are living the wrong life. They're not going to get a good outcome. There's no happy ending to 99% of what 99% of Americans are doing. Almost everything we could do wrong, we're doing. You name the area and I'll show you what we're doing wrong. And we're not willing to look at it. We don't want to know that truth when you're living in an non-sustainable environment. But you say, I spent money on my house, my American dream. Well, it's not going to be a dream. When you see it go up in flames because the fires are coming in Arizona and Colorado, or when you see the waters run down to where you're having to ration the water and you never thought it would happen, or when you're sitting at the ocean and now the ocean is coming and it's going to wreak havoc on your house and destroy it, or when, and it keeps going. And so it's not that people are inherently stupid and couldn't figure this out. They just don't want to know it. So if you're a person that wants to know the truth so you can then change, good for you. And finally on that point, here's what a study from the University of Missouri says. Eat protein at breakfast to snack less at night. And because why? Because a lot of people have a problem craving foods at night. And almost always you're going to crave a high-fat, high-sugar food. And that is not good. But if you eat a quality protein for breakfast, then that reduces the desire for the rich snack at night. Now, they're suggesting everything wrong here, eggs and lean beef. Well, it's University of Missouri, of course. But if you were to say, how about hemp protein, brown rice protein, soy protein, all organic and non-GMO, split pea protein, and then put other chia seed powder in it, acai powder in it, your greens and red powders in it, nuts and berries in it, your essential fatty acids and coconut oil in it, well, then you're going to have about 30 grams of protein, more than enough. That's about a half of most people's requirements right there at breakfast. And that also helps prevent those late night snack cravings. You really shouldn't go to bed with any food in your stomach. It'll disrupt your sleep cycle. Also, if you know anyone who has Parkinson's disease, a new study that was a randomized study used vitamin D and found that it can help people. This was done at the University of California, Davis. And they're recognizing how promising vitamin D is. So I suggest 5,000 units of vitamin D3 if you know anyone. But vitamin D just doesn't help you with Parkinson's. It also helps you with lung function and bone health. From Medical News Today, published from the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, quote, maintaining adequate levels of vitamin D can help people breathe better, may even protect against tuberculosis. They studied 10,000 adults to come up with this. And also fiber can benefit chronic kidney disease patients. This was a large study, and they took a look at how much fiber a person needs, and they're saying that by giving people for 2 weeks 23 grams of fiber a day, or actually for 4 weeks, that it made a positive outcome. I would agree with that, but I would get people double that. I'd go up to 50 grams of fiber a day. I think, once again, they're too little. Back in a moment with your calls. Our number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And by the way, let's just say that you're like most people and you haven't done a whole lot right when it comes to your health. You've overstressed. You've allowed anger and rage to dominate many of your emotions. You have intentionally chosen foods or beverages or drugs that destroy cells. The good news is that we can repair a lot of that damage. So it is not inevitable that you'll end up with a disease or diseases. If you put your mind to it and you're really disciplined, a lot of diseases can be stopped and mitigated. I'll deal with that on some upcoming programs. Back in a moment. Have you with us, everyone. Let's say hello to Faiza from Hamilton, Ontario. Hi.
Hi there. How are you?
Good.
Good. So the reason I'm calling is I wanted to find out if you have any suggestions for boosting a dog's immunity.
Same as a human's immunity.
Okay.
And what I generally do is I start by making a shake every morning. And I put in there vitamin E, tocotrienols, which is a form of vitamin E, That will enhance the oxygenation to the tissue, and that's very important. It also helps deocclude arteries. And dogs and cats are just susceptible to getting atherosclerosis, osteoporosis, dysplasia, and allergies as a human. In fact, more so because of the worthlessness of probably 90% of the vaccines dogs are given, which they shouldn't be given. In any case, so you start with a protein shake, and I blend the nutrients, because the nutrients, if you put meat in there, they're going to lap it up. And cauliflower oil, and always give the cauliflower oil. Cauliflower oil is very good. But also giving some raw salmon, wild salmon, is also good.
Raw salmon, did you
say? Raw salmon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you ever notice a dog or a cat will eat wheat grass when they're sick? They'll look for wild greens.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go in someplace dark under a porch, and either they die or they get well. It's their innate knowledge to eat chlorophyll. So cats and dogs are just not given chlorophyll, and especially dogs need that chlorophyll. So you can put in chlorella or spirulina. That also is important into the mix. And B-complex and vitamin C are also important.
Okay.
And probiotics are essential. So, and the sulfur, all of those will help the dog's immunity. And I stay away from all canned or boxed food. Remember, in the wild, animals stay healthy by eating raw.
Yeah.
And that's crucial.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at most people, their animals mirror their health. Okay?
Okay, great. And as far as quantities, like you were saying, vitamin E, do you have some idea?
You can get this in a library. I have a book on it called Natural Pet Care. And it gives you, for every disease, cancers, anything that goes wrong with your dog, your cat, birds, horses, and ferrets, it gives you the dose range that you need.
Okay, wonderful.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for sharing.
All right.
Let's say hello to David from Northern California. Hi, David.
Hi, Gary. A couple of questions. First is, I have a friend that thinks that eating raw eggs or even organic, you know, free-range organic raw eggs is a healthy thing. The second is pickled garlic. How much potency is retained when we pickle garlic? Do we lose much of the value of it, or what's the situation there?
I don't know what they're pickling it. Sometimes they use sulfur dioxide, which is it's a preservative, and I wouldn't touch that at all because it can adversely affect the lungs. It's highly allergenic, and that's what they use to stabilize food coloring. So when you see an apricot in a store that's orange, or peach that's orangish yellow, or nectarine the same, that's all because of that sulfur dioxide. So don't touch those. Use only natural sun drying, no preservatives. So in garlic, you have the sulfur group, the sulfuryl group, which is extremely important. It will help kill cancer. It helps kill bacteria and viruses. It's extremely beneficial. And normal pickling, organic pickling, will not adversely affect the health benefits of garlic. But you got to know what you're getting, and therefore look at all those, quote, other ingredients on the label. Otherwise, it's fine. Okay?
Okay.
All the best to you.
Thank you. Raw
eggs? No.
Raw eggs.
No. When Sylvester Stallone started downing all those eggs for his Rocky Balboa character in Rocky, all across America, athletes started, you know, dropping down those raw eggs. First, that's dangerous. You can get seriously ill because there's a lot of bacteria that can grow in the embryo of an egg and on the shell of an egg. In fact, in restaurants, people don't know whether or not the egg that is being cracked for them in a souffle or from scrambled eggs has salmonella. And that's why you look at an egg, you hold it up, and you they used to do what is called candling. They'd put a candle between themselves and the egg, and they'd see they would see whether or not there were any cracks in it. If there were cracks, they'd throw it away because they knew they could get sick. So you shouldn't have any raw eggs ever. It's just that simple.
Even if they're free-range, organic, and so on and so on.
Okay, let's make this easier. You're from California. I'm going to give you the benefit of a doubt here.
Yeah, give me the benefit of a doubt.
All right, if you were Southern California, we'd just hang up on you, but we'll give you the...
I agree with that. I agree with you.
All right, now, if you understand true organic, it means that the soil has not been sprayed with pesticides, artificial fertilizers, herbicides. They're using natural compost, frequently from cows and horses and sometimes chickens. And it might take 2 years before chicken manure is not so hot that it would burn out the seedlings. And so you have different maturing times for the manure. Then that is blended with compost, and you make your compost by taking leaves and grass and you shred them, and you then put a tarpon over them and you put some manure on there, and boy, it gets hot. It can get 140 degrees. And what's happening is living microorganisms are breaking down all this until where you finally end up in about a year, you have rich, rich soil. But when you grow any food in that soil, whether it's sprouts or lettuce, anything at all, the soil is extremely dangerous. That's why you should always wash everything thoroughly, because manure is loaded with at least 16 minimally microorganisms that can make you sick. And we have over 100 million cases of food poisoning each year in the United States. Thousands of people die for a lot of reasons. Most of it's because of contamination or because they bought something that was bad. They didn't realize that that once meat is cut for hamburger or ground beef or, let's say, hot dogs, that it speeds up the amount of bacteria. And by the way, bacteria still grows even in a freezer. That's why no one should have any ice cream or ice cream type of product for longer than 3 months. Longer than 3 months, throw everything out. And only if it's dairy product. If it's dried fruit, that's fine. It'll last forever. But anything that has bacteria to begin with, the bacteria is simply slower in its reaction. It doesn't go into a state of suspended animation. For that, you have to get down with hydrogen gases down around 60 below zero. In any case, we're talking about basic hygiene. So let's say I go into a restaurant or a health food store. Today I went into a health food store. Now I watched as the person washed the celery and the spinach. And I said to this person, make sure that you massage the leaf, every leaf of the kale in particular. And any vegetable that has a crinkly leaf, a wrinkled leaf, you have to physically massage the top and bottom. Then you put it in water and you agitate it three times and rinse. That way, little tiny pockets that you wouldn't see with the naked eye that would have just that tiny little microscopic grain is enough to cause a bacterial contamination in your gut to make you sick. So you go into most restaurants and they're busy. No one's going to wash anything. You go into most kitchens, man, having owned 4 restaurants, I'll tell you, even under my strictest, and I'm very particular about hygiene, I've still seen them make mistakes. So, because when people get busy, they don't see if something's thoroughly washed, it's just a real quick wash. That doesn't do anything. Could you imagine working outside all day long and being really grungy and dirty, and you run through a shower in under 2 seconds? Would you then think you're clean? Not at all. Would you, David from Northern California, would you want to drink a glass of vegetable juice where none of the vegetables were thoroughly cleaned and dirt, meaning feces, was in the juice? Would you?
No.
Okay, well, Nor would any reasonable person, but that's what's possible, and that's how we get sick. That's why wash it so that you don't get sick. So the idea that because it's organic, it's not going to be harmful is simply not the case. All right? Nice to hear from you, David.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Let's go over to, I think it's, is it Shanice from Vermont?
Yes.
Hi, Shanice.
Hi. I want to know how we can get your videos, how I can get your videos and movies shown at our public access channel, on our public access channel here in Montpelier.
It's easy. By the way, just before I came into the studio, we have our office on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and we have an archive. And I go to Gary and All TV, and that's where we have hundreds of films. And we had 5.4 million hits, and these are all recent. So there's a lot of activity, especially when I get off the road, and I've been on some PBS stations all across the country, I think about 40 or 50. People want to go and see the work, so we're very pleased about that. Any public television in the station in the United States, college station, that wants to carry our programs, we do not charge a carriage fee. We allow them to show it as many times as they want, and we have DVDs that we send out. The person selects the DVDs, and if they have a special format that they need it in, then our editors will make that format, and we ship that to them, and we don't charge them, not even the shipping fee. So what you do is, tomorrow, you can call and ask to speak with Jason at 646-926-5422. That's 646-926-5422. Ask to speak with Jason. And then he will send you a list of the hundreds of programs that we have. That includes documentaries. And then you select the ones. And then you can take them into your local station. And any ones they want to play, and however often they want to play, then we send a package. Generally, a package is 12 weeks worth of programs. This way they have it for every week. And then when it gets running low, we automatically send another. So they're always showing new and vital films. We make it easy for you. All right? All the best to you. And thank you for thinking about showing the films up there in Vermont. Before we take our next break, because I want to share something on the industrialized food, let's say hello to Patrick from Brooklyn. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Gary.
Yes.
I follow you kind of closely, but not a... Well, anyway, I'm 86 years old, and I found out that I have bad circulation in my lower legs. And at night when I go to bed, with covers on me and all, and a hot water bag, my feet get very cold from the knees down. Why is that? I can't seem to warm them up.
Well, as your doctors have probably told you, if it's the calves, it's probably called intermittent claudication. It is certainly circulatory. So here is the issue. What can you and everyone else do who's listening to improve the circulation, not just in your legs, but also to your brain, other parts of your body, to your extremities? You can start taking in more green juices. Cabbage juice is good. In fact, it's great. Green apple and cabbage is terrific for you. You want to get high methylating agents like trimethylglycine. Just remember TMG, trimethylglycine. Also good would be coenzyme Q10 and NADH. I would also use DMG, dimethylglycine, a whole spectrum of vitamin E, a natural vitamin E with tocotrienols, ginkgo biloba, which is very good for circulation, and that's what I would start with along with cayenne. And you have to build up with cayenne. You start with a low heat unit, a single capsule a day. And if you don't have a problem, there's no indigestion, then after about a month, you can do capsule in the morning and a capsule in the afternoon. That will help with circulation to the brain, your eyes, your heart, and your legs. Garlic is also very important. And I would also use polycosanol, pycnogenol, two different things, polycosanol, pycnogenol, and vitamin C with quercetin. Those are all good for circulation. All right. All the best to you, Patrick, from Brooklyn. I'm Gary Nall. More calls at our number at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Nice to have you all listening, and we'll be back in a moment.
Get out of that bed, wash your face and hands. Get out of that bed, wash your face and hands. Well, you get in that kitchen, make some noise with the pots and pans. Shining through. Well, you wear old dresses, sun comes shining through. I can't believe mine, all the mess belongs to you. I believe to the glory of devil in my house. I believe to the glory of devil in my house. Well, Lord, I work as fast as my money goes.
Nice to have you with us. A new report from Public Health Nutrition, having looked at 14,000 children, they found that, and this was a group that looked at 8 countries, and they analyzed the relationship between parents' level of education and the frequency with which their children would eat good foods or eat bad foods and get vaccinated. And what they found was this: the more education the parents had, the less junk food the children were given, and the less likely they were for the parents to vaccinate. Now, this is important because what we have found, having written over 24 articles and published them online, all fully referenced, none of them refuted for accuracy. And they're there. I just posted one on Friday on Gardasil, that people who have a background in education, or at least people who are educated, they're more willing to take the time to look for the truth, and that could save a kid's life. So that's an interesting study. And also, they're less likely to want to eat anything that's GMO produced. We also found that scientific misconduct, fraudulent science, is rampant. It is epidemic. Now, this is from Medical News Today. That's a mainstream medical publication, and it was done at Cross River University of Technology, and it was published in the very prestigious PLOS Medicine. Here's what it says. Research activity, quote, is global, therefore research misconduct is a global problem. These are the conclusions of two commissioned essays this week in PLOS Magazine that review the problem of research misconduct across the world and provide a landscape review of the policies and initiatives of governments and institutions to manage research misconduct. Now, why is that important? Why should you care? Because when pharmaceutical companies or foundations or think tanks that end up having their lead researchers design a study, they can design it to get the outcomes they want. And then they can promote a drug. But what if the drug really doesn't help you? What if the drug is actually dangerous? Then it can end up killing you. But you don't know which studies are accurate and which are not, which are balanced, which are not. That's the problem. And we used to think that nobody would screw up like this intentionally. In science, you're dealing with lives. Just the opposite is true. Where money's involved, your life doesn't count. And if you doubt me, look at all the lawsuits that have been settled for tens of billions of dollars. Hundreds of thousands of lawsuits we're talking about, where it was shown in depositions, it was shown in discovery, that the manufacturers knew they had a dangerous product, but they built the cost of the settlements and a person's life into the cost of doing business. I'll give you an example. With Vioxx, 60,000 people minimally died from taking it for arthritis. They paid $8.58 billion, and everything was wiped clean. Their reputation, everything. But they had made over $24 billion. So the logic is this. If we can make $24 billion and kill 60,000 people, and no one has to acknowledge they did anything wrong, and nobody goes to jail, and we end up netting, let's say, $18 billion, well, good for us. We're smart. And that's the system. And it all starts with people who get bad results in science and say, wow, if I give their good results, the drug goes forward and I get paid more. If I get bad results, the study's over. So just understand that's how serious it is. That's why right now, every day, we look at science and we try to select the articles to refute bad science that we refute. And there's a new bad science that just came out, supposedly proves that vaccines don't cause autism. Just came out on Thursday. Tomorrow, I'll refute it and show you how bad that science is. Let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have an email here from a woman, from another woman from California. And she says this. She says that her parents, her mom and dad, live in Cyprus, and they had put a whole bunch of money in the bank there, and they're caught up in this horrific crisis that's going on there. And she asks, A, what can they do about it? They even had the banks closed there for a couple of days. And secondly, she asks, could this possibly happen in the United States?
All right. It's a lot worse in Cyprus than what the American public have been told, because first it was just supposed to be 10% or 9.6% over $120,000. Now it's 60%. That's 60%. Many of the Russian oligarchs and Russian criminals who had hid money there, they already got their money out. They saw this coming. They knew it was coming. That meant that large groups of, let's say, pensions that were kept there, they're going to take 60% of the people's pensions. So people who rely upon their pensions, school teachers and public workers, they're not going to have any money. They then froze the remaining 40% with no release in the foreseeable future. Instead, they're going to give people some mythical nonsense participation in the stocks of the bank if it ever makes money. So in effect, right now, they're holding 100% of all the people's money over $100,000. Now, think of how many people in the United States who worked hard, earned their money, and have their savings in an account in a bank. And you think, well, that wouldn't happen here. Besides, we have the FDIC, and it's going to insure you. Here's the reality. A, it can happen here. In fact, the head of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and the British banking giant met to go over how this would work so they could actually implement this if it was needed in the United States. And you could duplicate it right here. Also keep in mind that probably 90% of the people who are going to end up losing money in Cyprus are just regular, financially conservative people who were using, and businesses who were using that to put their future money that they have to live off of for the rest of their life. Let's say you're 60 years old and you have $300,000, $400,000 there, and but you planned on how to living on that, paying your mortgage or rent or food and insurance, and now that's gone. They've stolen the people's money. Also, there is the assumption in the United States that if money goes into a bank, it's still yours. It is not. The moment you deposit any money into any bank except North Dakota in the United States, it's the property of the banks. It can take it, spend it, however it sees fit. And then you say, okay, so there's a too-big-to-fail corporation like Citibank, and they fail, and we get creamed for $76 trillion. That's how much they're at a loss if they go down in derivatives. $76 trillion. Well, that's more money than the whole world makes gross domestic product. And we're only at a $15 trillion in the United States for our gross domestic product. Well, they could confiscate everyone's money in the bank. They could do that. And based upon how corrupt people in power are, they never look at the consequences to themselves or to others. That's why power almost always corrupts completely. So let's say you go to the FDIC and it says, well, we have $24 billion. You think, oh, thank goodness. But right now, there would be $7 trillion in savings and other transactions that they would be having to cover. Well, how does $24 billion cover $7 trillion? It doesn't. It's not even the same ballpark. So quite simply, you would have to have the Fed print massive amounts of money for the Treasury. And the Treasury's not going to do that. First, it wouldn't be allowed. And second, people would just end up having to lose. So I believe that people should take their money out of banks wherever possible, keep a small amount in, what they need to run their business, what they need for their regular chores, and put it where no one else will know it is and where you can safely get to it. I don't trust anything. I don't trust anybody. I've just seen everybody taken advantage of by people in power. And the people in Cyprus, they're never getting that money back. And where did that money go? Where does this, was supposed to be five, now it's seven. Where does that seven, where does that money go? $7 billion. That money goes to those who held the bonds, those who made the investments, the speculators. None of that goes to the average person in Cyprus. So once again, as is the case all over the world, including in Greece and Spain and Portugal and Slovakia, those who were responsible for creating the crisis are given a pass, they're bailed out, and those who had nothing to do with it are having to foot the bill. It's for the people to wake up and to throw out their governments completely, every last one. If they can't do that, then they're going to be suffering the consequences. All right? Thanks, Luann.
Okay.
And last call, Cameron, your turn.
I'm just reading 1491 right now about the Native Americans before, you know, the settlers came. And I'm just wondering why, with their wonderful immune systems and their healthy, you know, attitudes, why did they succumb to these infectious diseases like smallpox on such a great scale, do you think?
Well, it's simple. The same way that you, as an American, would go to Mexico and you're not drinking the water, you're smart enough to that, you're not eating the mystery meat out on the little stands and the bodegas, but you're in a five-star hotel and you take your shower and you're not aware that the water coming through that shower probably has microorganisms that are going to get in your mouth when you take a shower. And as a result, you end up getting dysentery, and you spend the next 3 days looking green, yellow, and red, and vomiting and diarrhea. It happens every day. But are you also aware that when people from Mexico come here, that frequently, for a period of time, they also get amoebic dysentery from our water?
Mm-mm, yeah.
So when you are faced with a microorganism that you have not seen, your body has no experience with, there's a phase of adaptability. And not all Native Americans were destroyed, but a great many were because their body could not adapt mm-hmm. to it. All right, that's the reason.
Okay, thank you.
All the best. And that brings us up the end of this particular program, and I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen in. It's always nice to share positive information with you.
You better stop, yeah!